fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Got nothing against the big town. Still hate seat enough to say, look who's in the big town. But my bed is in a small town. Oh, that's good enough for me. I was born in a small town, and I can breathe in a small town.
Can small towns and small cities be centers of a new democratic renaissance? That is the belief of Harry Boyd, who is the head of the Center for Democracy and Citizenship at Augsburg College and a senior fellow at the University of Minnesota Humphrey School of Public Affairs, and one of our guests today on Route 51. I'm Glenn Moberg. Dr. Boyd is the author of 9 books. He has written for the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. In the 1960s, he worked with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., and he will give the keynote address next Tuesday night, a free keynote address, at the 20th Conference on the Small City and Regional Community at UW-Marathon County in Wausau. He'll also be participating in the conference on Wednesday. For the next hour, we'll be examining why some cities, like Minneapolis-St. Paul, have good records of citizen participation, while others, like Miami, Florida, have abysmal records. We'll look at how participation is playing out locally in central Wisconsin, and look at how our small communities are coping with some big city problems. Rounding out our panel, Lee Peek, Vice Chair of the Marathon County Board, and Dr. Eric Giordano, who is the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, which is sponsoring the event. Now, if you've got something to add to the conversation, please give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Harry Poit, thanks so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure, Glenn. Good to be here.
And Lee Peek and Eric Giordano, thanks for rounding out the panel.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Lee, we also want to welcome you back to the radio airwaves. Lee was the morning show host for 10 years at WDEZ here in Wausau, and it's good to have you back behind a microphone again.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thank you so much. It's a neat opportunity and a great discussion and one that needs to be had.
We have problems, Lee, getting people to vote in national elections for president. Mm-hmm. How difficult is it getting people interested in local county board races?
It's very difficult. In fact, you know, we talk about this from time to time. I don't know that you could go through the neighborhoods of Wausau or even some of the areas around Marathon County and you ask somebody, who's your county board representative? I don't think they could tell you the name, you know, let alone you know what it is that representative does. What the issues are, you know, on the docket right now. It's very difficult, and that's something that we're trying to change.
But yet, things that happen at the local level, at the county board level, or in cities like Wausau, where you can vote for the mayor and the members of the city council, or local school boards. That's all really important stuff.
Right,
and also elections where you as an individual actually have an opportunity to affect the outcome.
You know, you do, and I don't know that there's enough mind paid, you know, within the public to how much local politics affects you directly as a person living in the community. I think because so much is talked about on the national level and even on the state level, especially in the last few years, I know that a lot of people kind of focus on that and don't realize the impact of local government on directly on their lives.
Right.
And there's a huge impact, sometimes even more than the national and the state level.
Let's move on to Eric Giordano. Eric, tell us a little bit about this conference next Tuesday and Wednesday. And again, Harry Boyd is giving the keynote address Tuesday night. That part of the conference is free and open to the public.
Right. Well, this is actually the 20th annual Conference of the Small City and Regional Community. It first began in 1978 through the Small Cities Center at Stevens Point, which is run by our friend Ed Miller and Bob Walensky. And so they've been offering this then biennially for quite a while, and it's been held really all across Wisconsin and some other states in Central America, in the center of America. And it's covered a variety of themes. For example, 2 years ago it was on the theme of small cities and health. And this year it's on reimagining civic participation. So we're really excited to have Harry as well as the conference hosted here.
Well, what are you trying to accomplish?
Well, I really think that, that this topic is timely. This idea of civic participation, in my opinion, really is undergoing a kind of a renaissance. I'm kind of curious to see if Harry agrees with that. He's really the expert. But, you know, we see this all across the country. Local citizens are wanting to participate more. Local governments are desiring more participation, and they're starting to reach out to different groups who've been doing this to find out how do we get people more engaged? How do we get them? How do we sustain that engagement? How can we empower people to make decisions that affect their future? And partly because they're seeing that at the national and state level, sometimes they seem shut out from political empowerment.
Now, you've got Harry speaking for the keynote address. That's Tuesday night at what, 7:30?
7 p.m.
At the Jim Venenga Theater, Center for Civic Engagement, which is the brand-new building on the UW-Marathon County campus. And then all day on Wednesday, and you've got to register in advance to be part of that, but you've got an interesting panel discussion going on about noon.
Right. Well, we're taking signups at the door too, so if you haven't signed up, you can still come. But yes, Harry is actually going to be involved, around the just before the lunch hour with another couple of panelists. One of whom is David Holwerk, who's the director of communications for the Kettering Foundation in Dayton, Ohio, which is an organization that's been dedicated to, you know, spreading seeds of citizen engagement for years. And so we're excited to have David here, and then also we're having the mayor of Racine, who's coming up to talk about what he's been doing in his area.
That's John Dickert.
Right,
and then
John Dickert.
It's being moderated by Mike Huggins, who is a former Eau Claire city manager.
Correct. And he's with the International Association for County and City Managers as well.
And you're going to the panel is going to try to come up with some strategies for increasing civic participation.
Well, we'll see. they might be a little contrarian. We'll find out. I don't know.
Harry Boyd, you're participating in that panel. You're giving the keynote address Tuesday night. The subject Tuesday night is your belief that small cities can be centers of a democratic renaissance. Explain that.
Well, you know, when the French observer, Alexis de Tocqueville, traveled across America in the 1830s, he wrote a book called Democracy in America. And he was very taken by the contrast between American society and French society. He came out of an aristocratic background. And he said in America, people take initiative. They don't wait for government to fix things. And they take initiative not only as individuals, but as people across differences. In fact, he had an interesting observation. He said, a sweeping observation, he said, in democratic societies, the art of combining is the mother of all knowledge. So he's saying that actually the skills and abilities to work across differences is the key to a democratic society.
Well, that sounds like a rephrasing of politics as the art of compromise. One of the great cliches of American government.
Here, and so I'm sure we'll mix this up next week. So in the movement, and when I was a young man, college-age kid, and worked for Martin Luther King, and in Minnesota, so I grew up in Atlanta in the South. I'm not from the Midwest, but I've been in Minnesota for a long time. And in Minnesota, the great politicians were not Moses kind of figures who were seen as saviors of the people. They were actually citizen politicians who worked in the life embedded in communities. And we have seen a real shift in that. So I think we've lost a lot of citizen politicians. I don't know what Lee thinks about that in terms of his board, but my observation is that people like Hubert Humphrey in Minnesota, or Al Quie, the Republican governor, they were really examples of citizen politicians whose identity, whose roots, whose relationships were embedded in the life of communities. And now it's become more narrowly professionalized. So politics itself has become professionalized. Mm-hmm. So when I was working for the the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, I worked in something called the Citizenship Education Program. And, you know, we helped people register to vote and battle the segregation laws in the South. But I would say the deepest contribution we made was we educated in a kind of citizen politics, not a politics of political parties, or not a politics of simply of politicians, but actually of politics that citizens owned, where they would learn the skills of working across differences. And we have lost a lot of that.
Harry Boyd, how do you explain the fact that we have such an abysmal turnout in our elections? In the Mideast, you can see people lining up for hours, often risking their lives to cast a ballot and get that coveted purple thumb. And here, people can't even get away from their smartphones to spend a couple of minutes to fill out a ballot.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I think it's connected to what I was saying. In fact, I'm convinced this is the case. So in the movement, again, that I learned from, was shaped by, we thought about democracy as a way of life. It wasn't simply a trip to the ballot box. Everybody thought that. All of the great leaders, my mentors, people like Martin Luther King or C.T. Vivian. In fact, I'm going down to the 50th anniversary today of a Southern Christian Leadership Conference voter registration project in the summer and fall of 65. We had a voter registration project and brought a lot of students, college students, down from Minnesota and Wisconsin and the North. But we didn't think of voter registration as the end-all and be-all of the movement. It was just a piece of the movement. So voting was connected to all sorts of other civic acts. It was part of what you did as an active citizen in a community. And it was also connected to people's, not simply volunteers, but people's work as a citizen preacher or a citizen teacher or a citizen beauticians. Beauty parlors were great movement centers, by the way. So there was a much stronger sense of civic engagement, and it was tied to what I would call a different understanding of democracy and also a different understanding of politics, both something that people did and not something that they just periodically did a gesture in.
Well, Lee Peek, people who serve on the Marathon County Board are certainly not full-time professionals.
No, and that does – That does get to be an issue when you do have, you know, people who have real jobs and then they also have to you know, come to meetings at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It helps to have employers, you know, who are willing to kind of go out on that limb and allow them to, you know, be able to be a part of the community in which they're working. So if, you know, my background, you know, being a sales background most recently, I'm in the community every day. I'm
right.
Talking to business owners. I'm talking to just business people. And it helps, you know, to be able to be a part of this conversation. It actually helps in that aspect too. And I you know, I've been very fortunate more recently to have, you know, an employer that realized that.
Harry Boyd is that getting to what you're saying, the idea that democracy is something that we do all of the time, not just when we're voting, and therefore the people who run businesses have to give their employees the freedom to participate in civic affairs?
Yeah, no, that's a great example of what I would call a civic business. You know, it used to be that businesses, small businesses and even bigger businesses, felt themselves rooted in the life of places, and they were part of the life of communities. In fact, in Minnesota, the Twin Cities, there used to be something called the 10% Club. It was just expected that if you were a big business or any size business, you were supposed to give 10% of your profits back to the community for the civic life, the culture, the arts, the education of the community, the park system. And we've seen a real erosion of those traditions. In fact, I was talking to some business leaders at some major corporations a few years ago, and that's what they wanted to talk about, how the great tradition of people like Pillsbury and Dayton and Elmer Anderson, who had seen themselves first and foremost as citizens of places, that had really been replaced by kind of global corporations which actually didn't want managers to stay in a community too long because they would get too connected and too many ties.
Well, we have seen that locally, where with our local newspaper, the Gannett newspapers, they move publishers mm-hmm. and general managers in and out every 3 or 4 years, it seems, right when they start getting comfortable with the local community. Do you think that what you're talking about explains something that's happening in our national political scene? If we look at the Republican Party, we've got the ascendancy of Donald Trump, Carly Fiorina, Ben Carson, and the failure of a guy like Scott Walker, who's got impeccable conservative credentials. It seems that if you hold political office, the party's base wants nothing to do with you. They don't want professional politicians anymore.
Well, there's a really deep distrust of every major institution, including politics. You know, the Congress is way below used car salesmen these days in terms of public trust. But every major institution really has suffered a hit, even churches and certainly schools and higher education. I think Walker and his critique, his challenge to the University of Wisconsin, is playing on a lot of sense that universities and colleges have become more ivory tower. They've become more detached. So we see a problem of, I would call it, narrow professionalization. It's not against professionalism, but we've lost the idea of the citizen professional whose work is a part of the life of the community, a citizen teacher and the citizen business person and, the citizen hairdresser and the citizen drugstore owner. And so a lot of our work is how do we revitalize those practices and identities. It's not only skills and methods, and I'm sure we'll talk about this next week. It's really identity. Who do you think of yourself as? And one of the things we've seen in talking to a lot of people in the federal government, I coordinated a project with the Clinton White House from 1993 to 1995, looking at what's going on with the gap between citizens and government. And the most dramatic finding, and we found it across agencies, not only in the Congress, was people said, we've lost the civil in civil service. We don't think of ourselves as citizens anymore. We're doing things to citizens or for citizens, regulating citizens. But there is a sense of kind of, you know, a detachment of identity from civil service.
Let me get reaction from first Lee Peek and then Eric Giordano. Lee?
I couldn't agree with what Harry is saying more. I think what happens is constituents will look at their government leaders as making decisions within a vacuum. Making decisions within a box. And I know for us, you know, on the Marathon County Board, when the new leadership came in, you know, about a year and a half ago, but not even just the leadership, the full board, we wanted to create a different culture. You know, yes, we are elected to do a job and to make decisions, but these decisions have direct impact on people's lives. And a lot of times you see, you know, scenarios play out where you make a decision as a governing body and everybody screams, you know, to high heaven that it was the wrong decision. We never, because that governance never gave them a chance to speak, you know, or to have any kind of input. So, you know, it wasn't just a matter of us, you know, excuse me, wanting to come in. We wanted to know when to engage. We wanted to know how to engage. We wanted to know the processes with which, you know, we engaged not only the public, but as leadership of the county board, you know, our own board. And, you know, that's why we've worked so closely with Eric and WIPS and Extension and utilized those tools to be able to identify the processes and engage, have a conversation.
Eric Giordano?
Well, I'm kind of interested to hear Harry's reaction to this. So he's absolutely true that national and even to some extent state government has been, you know, declining in terms of public satisfaction. But interestingly, a couple studies in the last couple of years have come out saying that approval for local government has actually remained fairly unchanged over the years. And so maybe that's why some of us think that in small cities and local governments and counties, you know, there's some opportunities here for engaging the public and to do so in an effective way, as Lee's talking about, that provide them real opportunities to make a difference in their lives and hopefully maybe even restore some of this civil, you know, in participation in governance. So I'm kind of curious, Harry, what you think about that.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk about the democratic renaissance and small cities and towns' roles. I think it used to be that states were called laboratories of democracy. I think it's more accurate to say that local communities are laboratories of democratic revitalization because what you're getting at, Eric, is that people still feel local government, even if participation isn't so high, even if the same problems of narrow outside experts have developed, they still are closer to the action and the closer to people's lives. And people still in smaller towns and cities have a sense that they know people. They don't feel as anonymous. They don't feel as lost in the crowd. They don't feel like they're depersonalized numbers. So I think that the movement back to a robust democratic way of life, small cities are going to take a lot of leadership.
Are there things that small cities offer just because of their size that big cities don't? I worked in Chicago for a long time and covered the politics there, and trust me, Chicago has a very vibrant political tradition, and everyone seems to have an opinion and be engaged with their wards and their aldermen. Why the emphasis on small cities as opposed to big cities? Why can't big cities do the same thing?
Chicago. So Chicago is a distinctive city. It has a very, very rich history of neighborhood and community and civic organization. So you could look at Chicago not as a vast metropolitan area, but as a community of a huge number of communities.
Well, there are actually 72 separate neighborhoods in Chicago.
Yes.
They have their own identity, often their own languages. You go to Avondale on the north side, everybody speaks Polish.
No, yeah,
that's one example.
And there's a book out a couple of years ago called The Great American City on Chicago, and it found that you could actually identify different cultures in different neighborhoods. And the most important variable about levels of all sorts of things, safe community safety and opportunities for young people, was not the income level. This is very interesting, but the extent to which there was a culture of civic involvement and empowerment in the different neighborhoods.
The center that you work with and helped found at Augsburg College put out a study recently about the difference between Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Miami in terms of civic participation and engagement. It's called A Tale of Two Cities. Compare those two and why you singled out those two communities and how they're different.
Yeah, let me just do a little edit. So we moved our center from the University of Minnesota over to Augsburg about 5 years ago, Center for Democracy and Citizenship, which I'd founded in the late 80s. And now we're merged into with another center, so it's now the SABO Center for Democracy and Citizenship. And my writing, I'm no longer the director, it's Elaine Eschenbacher. My position is called the Senior Scholar in Public Work Philosophy. So, but the study was undertaken with something called the National Commission on Neighborhoods, which is a congressional, the National Conference on Citizenship. There was a National Commission on Neighborhoods I was involved with a long time ago.
Okay.
But the National Conference is the congressionally mandated group that studies citizenship and patterns of citizenship. So in 2010, for the first time, a number of measures looking at citizenship and civic engagement were added to the U.S. Census. So this was based on a huge database. And, you know, 40 measures, but they were things like voting levels, but also levels of voluntary involvement, whether you work with your neighbors on problems, whether people show up at public meetings, informal measures like whether families have meals together, whether you talk to your neighbors, whether you know people in your community. So a lot of different measures of civic engagement. And what we had found in the 2009 study that Minnesota as a state was the most civically engaged state in the country when you aggregate across different factors. And then in 2010, we compared Minneapolis and St. Paul with Miami, and Minneapolis and St. Paul were the most engaged, civically engaged communities if you looked at all these variables together.
Well, some people would say it's like you're comparing apples and oranges. Miami and Minneapolis, St. Paul, they've got different demographics, they've got different histories, different cultures, and even different climates.
Yeah. Well, sure. And a lot of these variables were controlled for in looking at different measures, like educational levels. You can look at people who are college educated in both cities. And college education in the Twin Cities predicts civic engagement much higher levels of civic engagement than college education in Miami.
Well, according to what I read in the study, people who have just a high school degree in Minneapolis and who are of relatively modest means are much more likely to participate in government and civic affairs than somebody who's comparatively wealthy with a college degree in Miami.
That's exactly right. That's what I was getting at. And we have controlled for race and we controlled for income. So we controlled for different variables. I would say, given all of that, it's the history of the communities that makes the difference.
Well,
and
the practices
that developed over periods of time.
I want you to hold that thought. We have to take a quick break. We're talking to Harry Boyd. He's the keynote speaker at next Tuesday night at the Center. The conference on the small city and regional community. Also, Eric Giordano and Lee Peek. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're also going to talk about how big city problems are coming to small communities and what we can do about that on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
And I found that round here in this city that I won't disappear. In this city, I got nothing to fear. In this city.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Northwind Renewable Energy, Stevens Point, with a focus on renewable energy system design and installation, including solar, wood, and deep energy retrofits to existing buildings. NorthwindRE.com.
Long the boulevard of crime, stealing for a dime. But I tell you just what I do. The avenue of thieves, delinquents and reprieves, orphans and the city keys.
You're listening to Garland Jeffries' disturbing anthem, City Kids, about drugs, gangs, and inner city violence as we talk about our small cities and regional communities in north central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we're looking ahead to the 20th Conference on the Small City and Regional Community, which takes place Tuesday night and all day Wednesday on the UW Marathon County campus. Keynote speaker Harry Boyd of the University of Minnesota and the Center for Democracy and Citizenship is with us, along with Lee Peek, vice chair of the Marathon County Board, and Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, the sponsor of the event. I want to get back to the situation in Miami and Minneapolis, but I also want to talk about the fact that big city problems like heroin addiction and even gang violence are hitting our small communities like Wausau, like Marshfield, where they never had really before. Lee Peek, how does that impact what you try to do on a local level?
Well, obviously it takes funding. I mean, that's, you know, number one, trying to fight that battle. For us in Marathon County, the big issue right now facing when it comes to drugs is the synthetic drug market. You know, the kind that people are making in their own bathrooms.
But just yesterday we had another heroin trafficking arrest.
Right. And it's a kudos to the Marathon County Sheriff's Department. I know the Marshfield, local Marshfield Police Department was involved in that as well, and that's huge. But that's not going away. And it's something that is constantly being addressed, you know, whenever we're talking in terms on the county board of budget. And I know, you know, Sheriff Scott, our local sheriff here, Scott Parks, and Chad Bellup and the rest of the sheriff's department. I mean, it's something that's constantly, it's a constant. It's not going away.
Harry Boyd, how important is it for local governments to get everyday citizens involved in larger numbers in order to combat problems that we used to associate only with big cities, but now more and more we're seeing in our smaller communities?
Well, I think it's very important, but it's also not only government. So I would say, let me give you a story. A couple of years ago, after the Newtown shooting, we worked with a little town outside the Twin Cities, Falcon Heights. They wanted to have a discussion of what citizens could do about gun violence, rather than simply debate gun laws. And we went around in the beginning. There were about 30 people there. It had been called by the city government, the mayor. It was a town discussion. And as people went around, we asked who they were and what they did. And there were business people, school teachers, a principal, some people from the University of Minnesota, the city manager, the sheriff, social service agencies. And then we got to two elderly residents, and they said, "We're glad we're here. This is an important topic, but we're sorry there are only two citizens here." So we waited for a little while. Nobody said anything. So then we said, from our point of view, the problem is we've dumbed down citizenship as much as we've dumbed down the definition of democracy as simply meaning elections. So citizenship simply means voting and volunteering. And those are good activities. There's nothing wrong with them. But we've lost the idea that you're a citizen in all sorts of settings, in your work, in your school, in your business, in your newspaper, in your government, in your sheriff's department. And that led to a very lively discussion about what's been lost in all sorts of settings for civic engagement and how much power there would be if, say, the principal and the teachers in that room, or the business people in the room, saw themselves as citizens in their workplaces. So the huge challenge is not simply to think about government as the center for the action. Government plays an important catalytic and convening role. I think I don't want to underestimate government's importance. But a democratic society depends on many sites being civic sites and people seeing themselves as citizens through their work, not simply as off-hour volunteers.
Let's get back to your comparison between these two cities. Is Minneapolis-St. Paul doing a better job of integrating citizens into the day-to-day life of the community than Miami? And if so, why?
Well, Minnesota has a long history, and I think Miami's challenge has come from a very balkanized community where you have Cubans and African-Americans and Jewish migrants from the north, and you have quite a lot of divisions, which tend to create an enclave culture. At least that would be my take.
Well, you have more gated communities in Miami than you do in Minneapolis.
Kind of the gated communities of the mind, not simply physical gated communities. And Minnesota, we think, you know, the kind of the rap on the Minnesota and the Twin Cities is that it's a white bread and WASP kind of place. But actually, Minnesota was historically very diverse. And the Swedes and the Norwegians didn't like each other, wouldn't talk to each other. Not to mention the Germans and the Irish and the Mexicans and the African-Americans who came up from the South. I mean, it was very diverse. So what Minnesotans did, and it wasn't bad loving, it wasn't warm and fuzzy, but over time there developed platforms and settings where people learned to work together even if they didn't like each other, if they disagreed with each other. They saw other people as having crazy cultures. And it was that practical, I would call it citizen politics, of learning work across differences that developed a empowering civic culture.
Well, the Twin Cities faced their big immigration crisis at the turn of the last century in the early 1900s when you had all these people from Eastern Europe and Germany and Ireland coming over. Many of them couldn't speak English. which is a situation in Miami now, but their immigration crisis started relatively recently with the refugees from Cuba, correct? And the city is still now a magnet for refugees from throughout the Caribbean. And what you write is that in Miami, the Cuban community is kind of isolated and whole unto itself and doesn't really relate really at all to the overall rest of the community. And you contrast that with the Hmong immigrant community in Minneapolis, which has done a wonderful job of integrating with the overall society.
Well, you know, you don't want to make absolute generalizations. There are certainly groups in the Cuban community that are seeking to create ties outside the community. And in the Hmong community's case, the strong history of and the old history of groups like religious denominations, the Catholic Charities, the Lutheran Services, the congregations, and also the groups like a Cooperative Extension have long played a role in integrating newcomers to the Twin Cities. So it's been a kind of collaborative partnership. But I would say in the Twin Cities there's a long tradition of engaging people who are different. But I don't want to idealize it. So there are real problems in the Twin Cities, especially the what's called the racial disparity in terms of educational attainment. And other people would disagree with me on this, but I think it has a lot to do with the changing culture of education itself, which has become less embedded. Schools and colleges have become less embedded in communities, so they become more detached, and they become more kind of driven by a norm of individual stardom and achievement. So the testocracy, what the law professor, African American law professor Lonnie Grenier at Harvard calls, we've developed a testocracy. So you measure excellence by individual achievement on tests, which is a very narrow way to think about what schools are for and education is for. So it highlights individual success rather than cooperative success. That really works a burden on minorities and first-generation kids and poorer kids.
Eric Giordano, talk for a second, if you could, about the role the UW system plays and the fact that we have colleges all over the state embedded in local communities. UW-Marathon County is absolutely tied in with Marathon County. In fact, Lee, the county owns the building and the grounds. Yeah. And you've got these local centers we've got a radio station right now where we're talking about these things at UW-Marathon County.
Well, I'd just like to say Harry is 100% on the money on this issue of the importance of institutions as socializing influences or should be. And I think historically colleges and universities have been much, much more than about the testocracy that Guinier writes about and Harry agrees with. And you've just made the case, Glenn. I mean, you know, and not only do the local campuses at the 2-year level, 4-year level here in Wisconsin prove the point, but really we see statistically that the students who are engaged in co-curricular activities beyond just the classroom, who are engaged in internships with WPR, with other organizations, who are, you know, attending lectures and events outside of the classroom or in conjunction with their classroom work, are those who tend to be retained and succeed, not only in college but in careers beyond college. So I don't think it's always been the case that the university has been a great equalizer, an opportunity for students to get careers and to be socialized into what it means to be a productive citizen in this country.
And I would follow that up, too, Glenn, by saying that with having this at our disposal at the government level, and I mentioned earlier about wanting to change the culture and looking for those tools. When you have those tools as government, you have options. You know, you have different ways that you can approach, you know, a single issue. You know, how it's not a situation where you make that decision in a vacuum. You know, you can go to Extension or you can go to WIPS or you can have, you know, something held here at the Center for Civic Engagement, and you can hold people can come in and they can talk and they can have this. It gives you options as a government.
And I want to bring this back again to the Hmong, because Harry Boyd, here in Wausau, we have a very similar experience, I think, to what happened in Minneapolis. When I moved here from Chicago in 1993, there was tremendous backlash against the Hmong immigrants, and that's all kind of vanished. It's gone away. They've successfully integrated in the overall society, even though they faced, I think, much more serious cultural problems, a Southeast Asian culture that didn't even have a written language until the 1950s, than, say, the Cubans in Miami, which, as you said, are kind of in their own enclave.
Right. Well, I think, again, the Midwestern cultures have traditions of engagement across differences, civic associations, libraries, cooperatives, trade unions, business associations, which really brought people together across differences. And those are crucial. I would, and next week I'll talk about this, I think we have to push back against the trends that have begun to detach all sorts of institutions from communities. And here the idea of citizen professional. Professionals who learn to work in a collaborative, community-oriented way is really key. So, I mean, even in the research universities like the University of Wisconsin, there's been a shift in culture, and it trickles down in ways that erode civic life. So it didn't used to be that the University of Wisconsin flagship institutions had ideas like they were getting the best, quote, best students that were measured through tests. Or the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota started having tests in the early 60s. Before that, there was a concept of what I would call democratic excellence, not individualist stardom. So democratic excellence believed in excellence, but it was the notion that a diverse mix of students from all sorts of backgrounds interacting in situations of high expectation and public purpose could achieve greatness that a focus on winnowing out the stars doesn't achieve. And this was the great land-grant and public university tradition. But it was also City College in New York. It was the genius of the state universities and colleges that still exist in Wisconsin.
Harry Boyd, he's giving the keynote address next Tuesday night. It is free and open to the public at the 20th Conference on the Small City and Regional Community at UW-Marathon County in Wausau. Also with us, political scientist Eric Giordano and Lee Peek of the Marathon County Board. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51. We're going to take a short break. Here's Hank Snow with a musical list of some of the cities, big and small, in America.
Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, Texarkana, Monterey, Ferris, Santa Fe, Tallahassee, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Hennessey, Chippewa, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil Lake, Crater Lake, Beach, Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Oklahoma, Buggy, Sheffield, Jacksonville, Waterville, Costa Rica, Pittsfield, Springfield, Bakerfield, Shreveport, Hattonsack, Cadillac, Fond du Lac, Davenport, Idaho, Jellico, Argentina, Damtina, Pasadena, Catalina, see what I mean, driving everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man, from the desert's bare, man, I breathe the mountain air. Man, I travel, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like Spruce Tree Music and Repair, Pabst Theater, and Sprint Print play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, where programs for all ages amplify birds and art themes, now through November 29th, with opportunities to participate in workshops by visiting artists. LYWAM.org.
You better have some cash. If you're going up to the city, you better have some cash. Because the people in the city don't mess around with trash.
It's Mose Allison taking us into our final segment as we preview next week's conference on the small city and regional community with our guests, including Harry Boyd, who is a keynote speaker on Tuesday night. Harry Boyd, you've written recently about the visit of Pope Francis, saying that the theme of civic power weaves through his career. Explain that for us.
Well, Francis, who transfixed the nation with his generosity and his spirit of compassion, also is a very political guy. He writes a lot about politics and a different kind of politics, a larger public politics, in his encyclical and also in his first evangelization document. after becoming pope. So the pope comes from a approach to theology, a whole school of thought in Argentina and in Latin America called the theology of the people. So it's really a populist, not populist in the sense of demagogues like Trump, but populist in the sense of looking to the wisdom and the folk traditions and the popular religiosity of ordinary people as a source of inspiration and grounding. And that's a lot of what I think we need to remember, that
What do you make of the fact that he mentioned Dorothy Day, an admitted socialist who founded the Catholic worker movement, in his address to Congress? But then again, he also met with Kentucky clerk Kim Davis, who's at the center of the fight against gay marriage. This is a guy who's hard to categorize.
Well, you can't categorize him. In fact, you can't categorize another person that he cited that was an inspiration for me, Martin Luther King. So I talked to a group of young people yesterday that active in Black Lives Matter, quite angry about race. And I asked them, why do you think Martin Luther King assigned me to organize poor whites in 1965, which I did for 7 years when I was a young kid? And, of course, I couldn't understand it. But I mean, and I said that some of the white poor whites I was working with were in the Ku Klux Klan. But then one woman said, you know, I think it's because King realized that they were oppressed and you could find some common ground and they could change their racial attitudes and develop alliances. They didn't fit ideological boxes. So it seems to me in this way, Pope Francis is very much like Martin Luther King.
Well, you quote Peter Levine. Am I pronouncing his last name correctly?
Levine, yeah.
Levine. He compared coverage of the Pope with Barack Obama in 2008 and said, quote, the press completely ignores both of these leaders' talk of civic engagement. That theme was never covered in the 2008 presidential campaign, and no one mentions it when they cover the Pope.
Right. Well, I think, again, we've had, especially in the national media here, there's differences in the levels of media. But the national media, the Washington culture, focuses on celebrities and stars and superheroes, the kind of myth of the person who's going to fix everything, and really makes everyday citizens invisible.
Yeah,
and the interactions between people and the kind of energy and the creativity, which was the genius of has been the genius of America, a kind of faith, as Franklin Roosevelt put it, a faith in the common person. That has really been lost in the national media.
Yeah, I'd just like to add, some people also, especially we've seen this in Wisconsin recently, have conflated the issues of civic knowledge or political knowledge and political and civic activity. You know, recently legislation was passed to require civic tests for all graduating high schoolers. There's a big difference between just this knowledge, which we might think is important, and what it means to be civically active.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me say amen to that one.
Lee Peek, final word. We're almost out of time here.
I mean, this is a fascinating conversation. It's one that, you know, I think needs to be had. For one, you know, coming from a position of somebody who's never actually had opposition at the ballot box for my position in the county board, and there's a lot of people that I serve with that have not had, you know, through 5, 6, 7 terms, haven't had a lot of opposition. We need to get people need to understand that which affects their lives, and that's what we're trying to do.
Harry Boyd, you've got the final word.
Well, again, if people want to be agents and foundational architects of democracy and the democratic renewal, I think this conference will be for you.
And Harry Boyd, I'm going to leave with our listeners with a quote of yours. Ideas are sources of power. Definitions shape the frameworks we use to understand our experiences and the world around us. Elites skillfully seek to control these definitions. As the definition of democracy has shrunk, the people have lost power.
Living just enough for the city.
And we want to thank today's guests, Harry Boyd, head of the Center for Democracy and Citizenship at Augsburg College and senior fellow at the University of Minnesota Humphrey School of Public Affairs. Also, Lee Peek, vice chair of the Marathon County Board, and Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. The 20th Conference on the Small City and Regional Community takes place Tuesday evening, October 6th. That presentation is free, and all day Wednesday, October 7th, at the Center for Civic Engagement on the UW Marathon County campus. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Dean Kallenbach, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Special music today by Journey, John Mellencamp, Igloo and Hartley, Garland Jeffries, Hank Snow, Mose Allison, and Stevie Wonder. Thanks also to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. John Altenberg will be joining us next week on Route 51, along with Wausau Symphony director Dan Larson, with brand new compositions that they wrote together. You will hear them for the first time next Thursday morning on Route 51. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.